Ira Pastor, CEO of BioQuark, discussing the promising trends in the area of regenerative medicine that can help current and future soldiers return from the battlefield, is up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
All right, Ira Pastor, welcome to Veteran on the Move. We're looking forward to hearing your entrepreneurial story and listen to your company about BioQuark. Before we do that, take us back and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was brought up here in the Philadelphia area. I was a pharmacist by training that went to business school, but my real entrepreneurial background goes back a little further than that to my father, who was a veteran, a naval midshipman on a destroyer during World War II, who was also a pharmacist and, was educated as a pharmacist, was in World War II, and then came out of the war with a major injury, but also sort of with his entrepreneurial faculties still intact, and built a very successful community pharmacy business here in the Philadelphia area back in the 1950s and 60s, which it was sort of preordained that I, as his son, followed in his footsteps, which I did. And I spent the next couple decades working with him and learning the pharmacy business. But that went on to do further things with my career, namely, while it was very exciting to work in, dispensing medications and working in the sort of the big pharma industry of selling new drugs and so forth, my passion was sort of the next phase, sort of the big biotech questions in terms of how we can do a better job of regenerating and repairing and healing people. Of course, veterans fall in a major way into that category from some of the most traumatic, chronic, and acute damage that are experienced. And so, BioQuark's mission, which sort of takes into all the knowledge from the last 30 years that I've experienced in business, is sort of how we can move as an industry, sort of healthcare and pharmaceuticals as a subset of that, to addressing these much bigger problems associated with human degeneration, deterioration, disease, and death. So that is, in essence, our core mission.
That's awesome. Now, go back a little ways, and you said your dad ran a pharmacy there in the Philadelphia area. And by the way, my wife and I were just there visiting her daughter going to college her first year, and love Philadelphia. What a great city. Always love going there to visit her. It's a great time. So when you talk, you were, before we hit the record button, you were talking about you're more or less raised by your dad kind of as an entrepreneur, not just in the pharmacy industry, but talk about a little bit about what it was like being raised by somebody that was very entrepreneurial himself and was essentially an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where from a very early age, I saw his determination in terms of how early he got up, how late he came home. And of course, when he brought me into his stores from a very early age, I didn't just start as a pharmacist. I started, vacuuming the floors and working the cash register and cleaning off the shelves and things like that. But I was always around him. And I think it was, a combination of his sort of his education, but also, growing up in the Depression as a child of the Depression, and then simultaneously, of course, his time in the military and sort of instilling in him this incredible work ethic to get the job done. I mean, this was no game. And so, he had me there by his side from a very young age, immersed in sort of these ideas of prescription medicines. And he was a big proponent of deep discounting early in the 50s and the 1960s, before you had chains like Rite Aid and CVS and so forth. And it was just his passion. And I saw him working through his passion. And as I said, he built, from a very small pharmacy to a chain of 12 stores and a distribution mail order facility, with 220 employees, $40 million a year in revenue. I think that showed me with some, strong work ethic and determination, what could be done from very little.
And coming out of being a kid, how is it you got into the pharmacy industry more on your own as opposed just how'd you break away from, because you're doing a lot more than just working for your dad's pharmacy at this point. How is it you segued into the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, that was more a function of sort of the maturation of the industry in the 1990s. Drug companies, the Mercks and Pfizers and Glaxos of the world, decided that there was a benefit to acquire companies that were involved in controlling the prescription writing and the distribution. So I was acquired into GlaxoSmithKline at the time. So that is sort of where my transition from sort of retail distribution, wholesaling, things of this nature, made the jump into the ethical pharmaceutical business. Everything involved in, what is involved in taking some new thing, this new chemical or protein or whatever, and taking it through development and putting it on the market. And that was a whole other form of education. Fascinating place to work. I mean, a lot of my friends and folks still hang out there, but it just after I learned what I needed to learn after several of those years, I was missing the entrepreneurial spirited angle. Let's put it that way. People love to hang out there and they love to sell, the next cholesterol lowering drug and next anti-inflammatory. But I needed something a little more tangible, something more, you could build up on my own rather than, sitting in a $50 billion a year business. And so a few years into that, I jumped back into a smaller biotech. And that is where I am now doing what I'm doing.
All right, back talking with Ira Pastor from BioQuirk. All has to do with regenerative medicine. So Ira, in the beginning, we were talking about being raised by your dad and as a pharmacist kid and raised in the pharmaceutical industry and business, and get acquired by the big pharmaceutical company and work for them for a while. And ultimately you're looking to get back to the smaller side of things and that entrepreneurial, that entrepreneurial excitement. So eventually you walked away from the large pharmaceutical company to start up BioQuirk, which is all about regenerative medicine. So tell us, what exactly are you doing, or what exactly is BioQuirk doing?
Absolutely. So BioQuirk's mission is all about what we call the three R's, regeneration, repair, and rejuvenation. And the basic theme underlying it all is the fact that, as advanced a species as we are, we hang out on this planet with many organisms that are much further advanced than we are. Obviously, many people listening to the broadcast are well aware that you have species like amphibians, worms, starfish, that can replace their lost or damaged organs, tissues, body parts in perfect structure and function throughout their lifetime, including spinal cords, limbs, parts of their heart, whole eyeballs, even major sections of their brains can be, blown away only to regenerate and repair and come back to the whole organ. In the very same way, you have, organisms that are quite cancer resistant. You have some that don't age. You have some that age in reverse. And then you have some that even die and are reborn. Now, needless to say, we as humans are very weak when it comes to accomplishing these things. We unfortunately are fairly biased to, producing scar tissue. We bleed very rapidly and we die very rapidly from loss of blood. And so we've sort of over time have evolution has made us very good at scarring but very poor at regenerating. We want to change that. And that is the goal of BioQuirk. Whether we're talking about a traumatic brain injury, or whether we're talking about a paralyzing spinal cord injury, or worse, how we can mimic these wonderful capabilities that many species on this planet have, but we don't. And our goal is to create drugs, biopharmaceutical products, that can, in essence, allow for the natural regenerative processes that, you know, we lost throughout evolution to come back. And I think not just for the perspective of your chronic degenerative diseases, the Alzheimer's and the cancer and the diabetes and congestive heart failure, but also the acute problems. Of course, as we mentioned, the traumatic brain injuries, the spinal cord injuries, the more catastrophic type injuries that veterans would experience in the war zone. These are all on our plate and what we're very excited about.
Now, do you have any examples of some successes so far?
Yeah, I mean, the first few years of our existence, we primarily focused on lab work in terms of rats and rabbits and cats and mice and species of this nature, looking at the central nervous system, both the brain and the spinal cord, as well as working on other diseases like diabetes and like the human kidney, and basically how, without transplantation, how we can regenerate either diseased or damaged organs. So the first several years of our existence, you know, drug development takes a while, was all about the lab and having a lot of success. We're using biologics, using combination biologics, we call them, to mimic regeneration in species that don't regenerate. Because regeneration, typically in mammals, putting aside humans for a minute, most mammals don't regenerate either, with the exception of, the antlers of deer. So we had a lot of success in that area. Since then, with partners in the clinical environment, and we are, we're a U.S.-based company, of course, but this is 2018, so we have to be sort of operational everywhere. We have begun so-called phase 1 sort of safety and efficacy testing, primarily in the area of spinal cord injury. And this is an area, as our sort of our first foray into the clinic, where we have been extremely excited, looking at initial patients that are, so-called ASIA A damage, so no sensitivity, no movement, below the point of the spinal cord wound, and seeing patients recover sensation and the ability to urinate on their own and the ability to slowly recover motor movements, moving them up the spinal cord injury ASIA scale. This is very exciting. And although this is only so far in a very small handful of patients, it tells us that we're on the right path and that there are it's not that we're very different as species from all these other ones, but if we can just listen to the clues that we find in nature, understand the genetic differences, understand the proteomic differences between us and other species, we should be able to recover many of these abilities, whether they're in the spinal cord, whether they're in the higher brain, or throughout our bodies. And, obviously people ask about more complex forms of regeneration like limbs. We're getting close to that because when we can begin to see the formation of tissue like complex spinal tissue, it's only a matter of time before we move up that ramp to more complex body segment, body part regeneration as well. So this has all been all very exciting for us. Still a small company, still a limited amount of exposure, but we do believe we're on the right path.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy to think about. So with the spinal cord injuries, you're actually able to grow spinal cord material or nerves or whatever it takes to actually start to rebuild those things that were damaged in the injury and regain those items, those functions that you mentioned?
It's about regrowing, but at the same time, we've been very good at regrowing nerves for decades now. One of the biggest issues that humans experience is the scar tissue formation that blocks the connection of neurons the right way. It's wonderful you can grow neurons, but if you can't get them to connect to one another, the signals don't go and people don't move. And as a result, our work has not just focused on stimulating regeneration, but how we can turn damaged tissue, scar tissue, which is, it's not functional, but it's living, how we can turn that tissue into functional tissue as well to allow the impulses to grow through. Lastly, one of the areas that we don't normally think too much about is connecting the right neurons, because, you know, the spinal cord is full of neurons that do many things, and, you know, you don't want to reattach signals that are going to an arm, to a leg, and so forth. So these are all part of the sort of the overall package of neural regeneration as it pertains to the spinal cord. And once again, the clues are out there. It's just a matter of us sort of listening to them and understanding the right ways to do this. And, you know, one of the things I, you know, coming out of the pharma industry, which is so very interested in doing things with sort of single magic bullets, as I like to call it, this isn't about, you know, a little white pill in a bottle that you get from your local Rite Aid. These are about, you know, we'll call combination approaches, because, you know, when that spinal cord regenerates in that salamander, you know, he's not taking, you know, 10 milligrams of drug X. There are combinations of proteins and peptides and other biomaterials that that salamander uses naturally to regenerate that spinal cord. So we are taking a clue from these combination approaches in how we develop these biologics.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. And you say that your specialty, or what you're involved in the most, is the spinal cord injuries, or you're also getting into areas that are affected by PTSD and traumatic brain injuries?
Yeah, we've been very we haven't gone into the clinic yet with traumatic brain injuries, but we've studied quite a bit the last several years, and the, you know, the higher central nervous system is clearly part of our program. When it comes to the what we'll call the non-regenerative diseases of the central nervous system, so obviously in disease, when you make the transition now to chronic diseases, obviously things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, the brain is, you know, falling apart. But at the same time, as you just mentioned, PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorder, depression, anxiety, these are all pathologies of the central nervous system or the brain where you don't necessarily want regeneration. You want a repair of the tissue you have. Those cells, those neurons in the brain have been changed. They've been changed due to a traumatic experience in the war zone. They've been changed due to other forms of damage. And in these cases, similar set of technologies, we're looking at how we can basically take that neural tissue and erase the damage. Because we don't want, you know, we don't want you to grow a bigger brain in terms of PTSD or something like that. We want you to basically, you know, have the younger, rejuvenated brain that you had prior to going into, say, the war zone. That's the goal here. So we're very excited about the whole central nervous system because we feel that our platform can go in both directions. So equally exciting for us.
And how far along are you with all this? I mean, have you actually had some success with people?
Yeah, the primary success has been the spinal cord injury work to date. I mean, that's as far as we've transitioned into initial clinical work. Now, obviously, once again, drug development takes a long time, and you have to be very specific in terms of what you go after in terms of the targets. But, you know, it's only a matter of time before we so add more of these indications to the clinical portal.
And you've actually been able to use this on people, or at least some basic experimentation with humans up to this point?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not real familiar with the FDA approval process, but I know it can be long, arduous, and expensive. So I'm sure your company spends an inordinate amount of time working through that process and following the rules and trying to get to a point where it becomes, you know, legal and usable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole regulatory scene is indeed a major component of this business. And, you know, drug development takes a long time. The current timelines, you know, the major study done up at Tufts every year is somewhere in the terms of 15 to 20 years and upwards of anywhere between $2 to $5 billion. So, you know, it is a long-term business, a long-term proposition, drug development. And it's the same reason why, you know, as it's mentioned, while we are a U.S. company and we will always be a U.S. company, at the same time, we cannot ignore the 200 other regulatory systems out there. And so if, you know, if there are opportunities to move forward in Asia or Latin America or where have you, we have to take advantage of those too, because this is, you know, while 30 years ago, people in this industry said, you know, all you have to care about is the U.S. market because it was such a big part of the drug market. Now you know, at $1 trillion a year flowing through the global drug market, there are many countries that are coming online. And so we have to be everywhere in terms of our thinking about where we do development, what institutions, what government organizations we interact with, and so forth. So, yeah, we are we're out there on many fronts.
Wow. Can you talk a bit about the entrepreneurial side of things with BioQuark? Off the top of my head, I'm thinking, you know, how do you sustain a company for these long periods of time, decades even, trying to get a certain drug process or a certain drug treatment to the point where you can actually bring it to the market in the U.S., the funding requirements and dealing with the regulations, and you've got to have a lot of people and labs and everything on the payroll all for a long time before any of this ever pays off. So how do you get to the point of being able to do that and somehow down the road get some kind of success out of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's typically 95% of my workload. I mean, there's a very sort of typical model in this space whereby angel investors and early seed type venture investors fund you for the early parts of your existence in the lab. And, you know, we've raised a little over $2 million to date on that front. But then, of course, moving into the later or the larger clinical realm, of course, that's when institutional private equity that specifies or, you know, focuses on the life sciences, and venture capital organizations that focus on the life sciences come to the table. And typically, you know, from a small biotech perspective, you know, very few companies ever become the next, you know, Amgen or Genentech, just because big pharma is always there waiting to, you know, gobble you up and acquire you and put you into their portfolio. It's just the nature of the business. They ultimately have the bigger guns, generating, you know, billions of dollars of revenue a year on their existing products. So they're the ones that typically need to fund the late stage transition through the late clinic and then, of course, to the FDA. So we realize our position in that, but at the same time, you know, we have opportunities beyond, hey, give me $100 million and we'll do this for you. You know, we are also very active as a company in the consumer packaged good business in terms of cosmetics and nutritional supplements being in our radar, as well as some of the sort of the compassionate use opportunities in different countries. So, you know, we look at this as more than just sort of a pure raise a lot of drug development money play. And then, you know, from more of the entrepreneurial side of things, it is a business of failure. I mean, it is, you cannot avoid that only 1 in 10,000 things that you create in the laboratory will ever make it through development. So, you know, one of the things that I like to tell friends in the pharma business or the big pharma business that ever think of getting involved in this stuff is, you know, you better have thick skin. You better be prepared for rejection. You know, you're going to go to 200 VCs before one signs a check. You're going to get rejected a lot. You're going to get rejected from people that have, you know, failed at this before and, you know, don't think that you can succeed at it. You just have to have a tough skin. And, you know, if you have that, you know, I know people that, you know, hung around here for a few months and they get so discouraged, they bolt. But if you have that thick skin and you can stick to it, and, you know, that's probably the main thing I learned from my father, you'll succeed at it. Oh, you'll move further. Let's put it that way. And so here I am.
Now, is that an end game goal to actually get snatched up by one of the big guys?
I mean, like, yeah, look, in, you know, the ideal world, would I like to have a fully integrated company that is capable of doing, you know, the entire sort of value chain? Absolutely. But it's sort of the nature of the beast. Whether it's being snatched up or whether it's having, say, one of your products acquired or licensed by Big Pharma. And, you know, Big Pharma doesn't do everything nowadays. You know, they, a lot of the big companies out there pared down. For instance, you know, Pfizer as an example, they just got rid of their Alzheimer's disease research. They it's kind of funny when you think about it, that one of the largest drug companies in the world does not research probably one of the biggest medical issues that's, you know, approaching us. But, you know, there's an example. So, you know, Pfizer might license something that we're developing for cancer, but hey, we're also developing drugs for Alzheimer's, and that's not going to be Pfizer. So, you know, we'll take some large checks and we'll license products. And then in that context, we can maintain an independent company that that's doing other things. And, you know, there's lots of diseases out there. The last time I looked, and none of them are curable. So we have a lot of things to go after. And, there might be pieces of the company that we peel off and license exclusively to certain players in Big Pharma, but who knows? Someone writes the, you know, comes along with, wants to acquire the whole company. You know, that's always a possibility.
Wow. Now, what is BioQuark doing specifically? I mean, obviously, spinal cord injury is something that could relate definitely directly to veterans and wounded warrior issues. What kind of things are you dealing with or are you familiar with in the veteran space that BioQuark is definitely is directly dealing with?
Well, the you know, a few other things off the top of my head, you know, burns and deeper wounding or sort of skin wounding, which is, of course, you know, something that we have this inherent ability, and people think of the skin of obviously as something that one of the cells or one of the parts of our bodies that has a decent amount of turnover. But of course, in terms of burn, in burn injuries, you know, once you get a little deep there, there are problems that not just from the perspective of scarring and regeneration, but also the transmission of infection and other problems beneath the skin. So the whole area of wounding, wound healing, you know, this is all on our plate. And I would say, you know, beyond that and the central nervous system, the probably the basket of what we'll call just metabolic disorders, from kidney to the pancreas and diabetes and then the heart. So if we will lump that together as sort of endocrine dysfunction. And, you know, I don't look at it specifically, of course, you know, damage to the heart and the circulatory system and so forth is, of course, a major component, as you know, of, you know, veteran care and the military and what have you. But, you know, simultaneously, this is just still, you know, we cannot ignore that this is still, next to cancer, the number one reason we all die. This sort of negative damage feedback between those three sets of organs. So the kidney has been our initial target just because it is, you know, most people think that, you know, 'cause you have two of them, then, you know, everything's okay. But still, when your kidneys go, everything goes pretty fast after it. So that is another important target of ours.
Wow. Boy, you definitely have several tall orders you know, in front of you. It's an incredible, fascinating business that I don't know a whole lot about, but it sounds very complicated, sophisticated. And, I mean, you're working on things that, you know, have payoffs potentially decades down the road. Definitely not your typical, I'm just going to go start mowing yards or something to make a living with, you know. So it's pretty incredible. Certainly takes, you know, probably half a lifetime to acquire the experience to be involved in that industry. So, you know, good on you for doing that and what you're doing. I did want to give you, we're getting close to the end of our time, so I want to give you the last word. First off, if somebody's interested in looking at BioQuark, how do we find you? And then if you want to finish off with just some basic you know, tidbits of advice for anybody in the veteran space that's out there that's looking to go into business for themselves, you know, what kind of advice would you have for somebody that's looking to go into entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. So anyone can visit us at www.bioquark.com, learn about our programs, our strategy, our people. Reach out. We're an open book, and we love to talk about what we do, so please do so. As far as the you know, the transition to entrepreneurship. And once again, I see this and I saw this through the lens of my father. I think he was the one that instilled it most in me. And, you know, I did not obviously have the honor of serving, but do know that he learned a lot. And he, you know, that experience, especially during World War II, molded him into what he became. And, you know, as I said before, you know, people being afraid of failure. I don't think veterans, you know, who put their lives on the line or have put their lives on the line for us are too afraid of that. I mean, they may be afraid of bullets and bombs and things like that. But I think, you know, most veterans out there, you know, thinking my father, they had the guts to stick with something and not be, you know, afraid of it or afraid of, you know, failure. And I think that's a very, especially, you know, when we get into some of these more these areas that have longer timelines or maybe many years out, just that ability to stick with something and the motivation and the determination to see it through. I think, you know, all veterans have that intrinsically, having, you know, had the guts to stand on the front lines for us. And I think have all the potential in the world to be excellent entrepreneurs.
All right, Ira, well, thanks for being here and sharing your entrepreneurial story. Look forward to hearing your future success with BioQuark. But that's it. So unfortunately, we're out of time. So appreciate you sharing your story, and we look forward to your future success.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim.
You bet. All right, we're out. As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.